Chapter 1. Why America Needs an Army. You don't dictate end states from the air. You can't control territory. You can't influence people. You can't maintain lines of control after you've established them. That will take a ground force. General Mark A. Welsh III, Air Force Chief of Staff. The nation's need for a capable, ready army is enduring, even if it has not always been a priority. During important moments in our nation's history, such as the beginning of World War II and the Korean War, ill-prepared army forces sacrificed at great cost to buy time while the nation went through the deliberate and time-consuming process of properly organizing, equipping, and training sufficient ground forces. The first battles ended badly. U.S. Army forces in the Philippines and Korea suffered painful defeats in large part because they were not prepared for war. While soldiers fought valiantly in both places, they were not ready for combat. Given the lessons of our own history and that large-scale ground combat against a peer threat is no longer unthinkable, it is our moral imperative to ensure that we send no soldiers into combat unless they are properly equipped, trained, and led. Army responsibilities. The primary responsibility of our Army is to conduct prompt and sustained land combat as part of the joint force. The Army must deliver ready, trained, and equipped forces to meet the demands placed upon it. Our nation expects the Army to be lethal, agile, and adaptive. In 1899, Secretary of War Elihu Root wrote, "The real object of having an army is to prepare for war." When not engaged in direct conflict, the Army focuses its efforts on conducting operations to prepare for and deter war. Our Army achieves readiness through sound doctrine, capable organizations, realistic training and education, modernized equipment, inspired leadership, and disciplined soldiers. Readiness is what makes our Army credible. Joint interdependence is the purposeful reliance by one service on another service's capabilities to maximize the complementary and reinforcing effects of both. Our Army is interdependent with the other elements of the joint force and serves as the foundation upon which the joint force conducts land operations. Just as the Army requires joint capabilities to conduct operations, the joint force also requires Army capabilities to succeed across the multiple domains of air, land, maritime, space, and cyberspace. Army support to other services provides key enabling capabilities to the joint force to include operational level command and control, communications, intelligence, and sustainment support. Only credible and ready land forces operating as an element of the joint force provide U.S. decision-makers with strategic options to shape operational environments, prevent conflict, prevail during large-scale ground combat operations, and consolidate gains to win in volatile or uncertain environments. Land power enables the nation's leaders to respond to security challenges in definitive and decisive ways. Land power focuses on destroying an enemy's armed forces, occupying its territory, and breaking its will. Land power protects our national interests, brings order to chaos, and protects populations. Only the Army has the capability and capacity to seize, occupy, and control large land areas, provide civil security, and provide a visible and physical presence throughout a territory or country. Controlling land requires a commitment of land power, a commitment historically met by Army forces and expressed by U.S. Navy Rear Admiral J.C. Wiley. The ultimate determinant in war is a man on the scene with a gun. This man is the final power in war. He is in control. He determines who wins. There are those who would dispute this as an absolute, but it is my belief that while other means may critically influence war today, after whatever devastation and destruction may be inflicted on an enemy, if the strategist is forced to strive for final and ultimate control, he must establish, or must present as an inevitable prospect, a man on the scene with a gun. This is the soldier. The Army's legacy of service makes clear the critical role of the American soldier before, during, and after conflict. War will continue to remain an intensely human endeavor. To defend our nation's security and prosperity in the increasingly interconnected and volatile world, the Army must remain globally engaged, provide America's leaders with options, and defend the nation's vital interests on the ground. This requires a well-trained and equipped Army prepared to protect the homeland, to defeat any enemy worldwide, and to provide disaster relief or humanitarian assistance when called upon. The Army's essential characteristics of trust, honorable service, military expertise, stewardship, and esprit de corps enable the Army to serve America faithfully as an established military profession. These characteristics of the Army profession reflect our national ideals, the Army values, the Army ethic, and the Army's approach to accomplishing its mission to defend the Constitution and the American people. Soldiers in the Department of the Army, DA civilians, are professionals, guided in everything they do by the Army ethic. They are certified and bonded with other Army professionals through a shared identity and service within a culture of trust. Today's soldier joins those men and women who previously served the nation with courage and dedication. The campaigns and battles for which our forebears fought set clear milestones marking the Army's role and importance in American history. The Army's historical legacy, discussed in the appendix, helps illuminate the challenges our Army faced in the past and will likely face in the future. The Total Army. The Department of Defense directs the Army to organize, train, and equip as an integrated total force. It consists of three components: the regular Army, the Army National Guard, and the Army Reserve. Together, the three components representing the total Army ensure that we have the capacity, capability, and endurance to do what the nation requires. Regular Army. The regular Army, commonly referred to as the active duty force, consists of full-time soldiers supported by the Army Civilian Corps. The regular Army is under the command of the President of the United States. Service-specific matters are the responsibility of the Secretary of the Army, the Chief of Staff of the Army, and other appointed officials. The regular Army includes units of all specialties necessary for the prompt employment of land forces. However, the regular Army relies upon units and capabilities maintained in the Army National Guard and Army Reserve. Army National Guard. The Army National Guard has a dual role based on the Constitution. Its first role is that of a state military force. Its second role is as an operational reserve for the regular Army. Each state, the U.S. territories, Guam, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands, and the District of Columbia have Army National Guard units totaling 54 state and territorial National Guards. Army National Guard forces remain under the command of their respective governors until mobilized for federal service. Each state or territory Army National Guard has an adjutant general, a general officer appointed by the governor, who serves as its uniformed leader. The governor can order the Army National Guard to state service since it is a state military force. The Army National Guard responds to natural disasters and other domestic emergencies many times each year. While serving their states, these soldiers are subject to civil laws and their state's codes of military justice. A governor can use the Army National Guard of the state for law enforcement, which is something that federal military forces cannot perform except under special circumstances. A small number of Army National Guard soldiers are on full-time active duty, a duty status called Active Guard and Reserve. When ordered to active duty, Army National Guard soldiers become subject to the Uniform Code of Military Justice and fall under the command of combatant commanders. Army National Guard forces are similarly organized and equipped as units in the regular Army and Army Reserve. The Department of the Army provides their equipment, provides much of their funding, and is responsible for assessing their combat readiness. However, states retain latitude in recruiting, manning, and training. Army Reserve. The Army Reserve is under the command of the President and serves as a federal military force. Elements of it mobilize when required. Most Army Reserve soldiers serve for a period in the regular Army and then elect to continue their service in the Reserve. The Army Reserve makes up about a fifth of the Army's organized units, but it provides a half of the Army's sustainment units, a fourth of the Army's mobilization base expansion capability, and most of its civil affairs capacity. The Army Reserve is also the Army's major source of trained individual soldiers for strengthening headquarters and filling vacancies in the regular Army during a crisis. Many Army Reserve soldiers are also civilian professionals, such as nurses, dentists, and computer technicians, who augment critical Army specialties. Similar to Army National Guard members, a small number of Army Reservists are full-time active duty. Army Civilian Corps. The Army has the largest civilian workforce in the Department of Defense. DA civilians are full-time and enduring members of the profession. The Army Civilian Corps provides the complementary and reinforcing skills, expertise, and competence required to project, program, support, and sustain the uniformed side of the Army. DA civilians have assumed increased levels of responsibility and greater authority since the Army transitioned to a professional volunteer force. Over 23,000 DA civilians have deployed to Afghanistan and Iraq in support of the uniformed services since 2001. They hold senior leadership and mission-critical positions in operating forces and key positions in the institutional force. DA civilians also serve in Army Reserve centers. Like soldiers and members of Congress, they take an oath solemnly swearing that they will support and defend the Constitution. Like their uniformed counterparts, DA civilians live the Army values and prepare for unforeseen future threats. The Army Functional Structure. You may fly over a land forever. You may bomb it, atomize it, pulverize it, and wipe it clean of life. But if you desire to defend it, protect it, and keep it for civilization, you must do this on the ground, the way the Roman legions did, by putting your young men in the mud. T.R. Fehrenbach. Soldiers and DA civilians serve in two functionally discrete entities known as operating forces and the institutional force. Operating forces. Operating forces consist of units organized, trained, and equipped to deploy and fight. They make up about two-thirds of the regular Army and three-fourths of the Army's total force. The Secretary of Defense assigns these units to the various combatant commanders. Operating forces are modular. They consist of interchangeable units grouped under various headquarters. When a Joint Force commander specifies the capabilities needed, the Army provides tailored force packages to provide those capabilities. In addition to conventional forces, the Army also provides the largest element of the Joint Special Operations Forces. Army Special Operations Forces include several Special Forces groups, the Ranger Regiment, Civil Affairs Units, Military Information Support Units, and Special Operations Aviation. The Institutional Force. The Institutional Force ensures the readiness of all Army forces. The Institutional Force consists of Army organizations whose primary mission is to generate, prepare, and sustain operating forces of the Army. Therefore, the Institutional Force remains under the command of the Department of the Army. The training base provides military skills and a professional education to every soldier, as well as to members of the other services and multinational partners. The Institutional Force is also the Army's principal interface with the commercial sector. Our National Industrial Base provides equipment and sustainment for the Army managed by the various headquarters of the Institutional Force. Army installations are power projection platforms that train forces and serve as departure points. Once operating forces deploy, the Institutional Force provides the sustainment that soldiers need for their missions and specified support provided by the Army to the other services. The Institutional Force focuses on departmental, Title 10 U.S. Code tasks, including recruiting, maintaining, organizing, servicing, supplying, training, educating, mobilizing, demobilizing, administering, including the morale and welfare of personnel, developing, outfitting, and repairing military equipment, equipping, including research and development, constructing, maintaining, and repairing facilities. The institutional force contributes to operational missions by optimizing individual and team performance and by ensuring the right soldier is in the right place at the right time. Combined with operating forces, it develops competencies critical to future responsibilities.